is a simple fun game, but it is chaotic. So as you see, like here, I don't know how much visible it is, but it is like a magnetic pendulum. So on the base of it, there are a few magnets, and the bob also has a magnet actually. So basically, when you swing the pendulum from one side, I'll probably just this is something like this. So if you swing it from one side, it will like swing, and after a while it will come to a stop to one of the positions. So there are six options here just for fun, like yes, maybe, definitely, no way, try again, ask a friend. So it is like just for small decisions when you take, which does not affect your life at all, whether you should eat out. Yeah.
So somebody who's taking a class virtually says that she can't get into the Zoom.
Yeah. So the AV person who came said something that it is difficult for them to connect it to Zoom. So I do not know about that actually, that technical difficulty.
Okay.
Hopefully at least the lecture is recorded, so in case she can't get into, she will have to watch it later on, I suppose. So yeah, this is just a fun game, but like, so in general, if I start it from somewhere at the same point multiple times, what do you think will happen? Will it go to the same option again and again, or will it be different?
Unless you can get it to exactly the same spot, like with no differing air wind conditions.
Yeah, so that is right. So that is what we see, that here, even though you start with almost similar initial condition, obviously it's handmade, like you are not giving a precision through computer or anything. So if you are starting with like your hand, it will have a bit of a difference. So it will show in the evolution. So here is a video. Sorry, I can't see my cursor here. Become too small, so this is just one pendulum, like you can see what happens after some time. It comes to a stop to one of them. And here I have two different ticks, and you can see that I have started with, I'm starting here with almost similar initial condition, right? Like similar position, and I'm not giving any velocity, any push, and you can see how it evolves. So in the first few seconds, you see that it evolves slightly similarly, but the path soon diverges. So this is what chaos is, that there is extreme sensitivity to initial condition. So this is a spherical pendulum, and we see chaos in it, but we do not see any chaos in a, can we see chaos in a pendulum in a plane? And can anyone give a reason why not? Yeah.
It's integrable.
Yeah, and why? why is it integrable?
It's got a constant of motion, which is its energy.
Yeah, it has one constant of motion, and which is the number of 1 degree of freedom, basically. So when the number of degrees of freedom is equal to the number of constants of motion, loosely speaking, then your system is integrable, and integrable systems can't show chaos. On the other hand, this system can show chaos. So why is it the case?
Because it has 2 degrees of
freedom. Yeah, it has 2 degrees of freedom, theta and phi, so it can show chaos here. So I just thought to give a few more examples, like simple pendulum can't show chaos, but I guess many of you might be aware about double pendulum that can show chaos. So here, this is a video from YouTube. So there are 3 different initial conditions starting almost in the same initial condition. As you can see, you can't really see right now that there are 3 different initial conditions here, but you can check the evolution. And after some point of time, you will start to see that the evolution is diverging. So this is one of the classic examples of chaos. And feel free to ask any questions like midway.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Is the size of the divergence in the paths, let's say, very close to initial time or something, so that they're not very far away, but they're still close, but they're still diverging. Does that quantity depend, can be expressed as the difference in initial conditions?
Sorry, can you explain your question again?
The function of the difference in initial conditions in some linear way.
How much the paths diverge. It's not a linear way. It's not in the linear sense. And there is a rate of, if your system is chaotic, then there is a rate of divergence. Stop it. Yeah, so if your system is chaotic, then there is a fixed rate of divergence in general, which is called Lyapunov exponent. I'll give the definition today. So one more question. Like here you see that once I like start it in some position, it stops after a bit. But in general, in an ideal, if it was an ideal Hamiltonian system, like a spherical pendulum, what would have happened as time t tends to infinity to any initial condition?
Wait, can you say the question again?
So like here we see that if I start it in any position, it evolves and then it comes to a stop. That's what we are seeing it here, right? But if it was an ideal Hamiltonian system, as time t tends to infinity, what would have been its behavior?
It would keep going if it didn't lose any energy.
Yeah, that's right. So this is kind of a real example. So there's some air friction due to which there is some dissipation, so it loses energy and then it comes to a stop. But if it was an ideal system, it shouldn't come to a stop, right? It will just keep on evolving. So just a difference to note. So these are, I talked about a double pendulum, simple pendulum, and a spherical pendulum. These are like Hamiltonian systems in which we see chaos, but chaos is not restricted to this in the study of classical physics. If like even beyond classical physics, in mathematical modeling of several things, for example, the Lorentz model, Edward Lorentz in 1963 came up with chaos like theory. The seeds of it were sown long ago in the beginning of 1900s. But the person, like we need computational power, and around 1960s we had computational power. So Edward Lorange modeled weather using 12 differential equations in the beginning, and then reduced it to 3 differential equations, and these are the differential equations. And in this system, and this is not a Hamiltonian system, and in this system you can see chaos. Something happened with the video. I don't know what happened. So here, this is the strange attractor you might know. The video is not working due to some reason, so sorry about that. So just you can see the strange attractor. So here there are 5 different initial conditions. There are small dots that you can see. So they were started with very similar initial conditions, and as it evolved, you can see it traces out a strange attractor, and different dots are at different positions in the strange attractor. So it is like sensitivity to initial conditions, basically. So this is just a brief motivation of chaos. So from this, now that you have visualized chaos, what do you think chaos is in mathematical terms? Just an idea, or what are the properties of chaotic system? Yeah.
Very difficult to predict in the future, or at least it has very high sensitivity to initial conditions. So
yeah,
if we have infinite precision, we can't predict what it will do in the future.
Yeah, that's right. So chaos implies unpredictability. Due to extreme sensitivity to initial conditions. And any idea what kind of systems can show this behavior? What would be the properties of the system that will show?
Maybe non-integrability.
Yeah, that's right. So non-integrability is a necessary but not sufficient condition for chaos. The other thing is, as I said, chaos is a property of general mathematical models as well, and not just Hamiltonian systems. And this integrability and non-integrability that we talk about here, the definition specifically applies to Hamiltonian systems. So non-integrability. A necessary condition in Hamiltonian systems. Can linear systems show chaos? In the sense that the equations of motion are linear. Yeah, that's right. So a set of linear differential equations do not show chaos. So chaos is a property of nonlinear deterministic dynamical systems. So in general, like in dynamical systems theory, that is where you get a like a general picture of chaos theory, and Hamiltonian systems are a special case basically. Yeah.
There is non-integrability and also non-linearity sufficient for chaos? Or?
No, it's not sufficient. Yeah.
So is it not possible to have like some form of a quantum chaotic system?
So like quantum chaos is not a part of this course, but just to say that like classical chaos is very well defined and characterized using Lyapunov exponent. But we can't use the same definition of chaos in quantum mechanics because of like linearity of Schrodinger equation and unitarity, like your wave function evolves unitarily, right? Like in a unitary evolution. So here we see that if you have two different initial conditions in the phase space in classical systems, if the system is chaotic, then the distance between the initial conditions diverges. But if you take for example, two wave functions corresponding to some Hamiltonian, suppose it is time independent, in that case the unitary will be e to the power minus iht, right? This time independent. So psi 0, what do you think will be the relation between these two? What is the relation? They are equal, right? So you cannot see basically any chaos in the evolution of the wave function, because like classically you have state variable, like variables, position and momentum. Quantum mechanically you have these wave functions and they evolve in a unitary manner. So you cannot see any chaos in the evolution of wave functions. Apart from that, other restriction is due to Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. For example, you can say that you can try to observe chaos in the expectation value of position and momentum variables. The thing is, chaos happens in the fine structures of the phase space classically. Like, it has to be aperiodic, right? If a system is periodic, then it cannot be chaotic. So aperiodicity is kind of a necessary condition for chaos. Like if you have any initial condition in the phase space, it has to evolve in such a manner that it does not come to the same point ever again. So since it cannot come to the same point ever again, and the other condition I'll talk about is boundedness, your phase space has to be bounded also. Like unbounded phase space, we don't talk about chaos in unbounded phase, like we only talk about chaos for energy cells in time independent systems where the system is bounded. For example, harmonic oscillator is bounded, but inverted harmonic oscillator is not, right? So we'll like anyway we will not we can't have chaos in inverted harmonic oscillator, but still we any higher dimensional system in which if your trajectory is unbounded, we don't talk about that. So we need aperiodicity. So if your system is bounded and you need aperiodicity, then what should happen? Like it any initial condition when it evolves, it will come arbitrarily close to the same, it's like the same points again and again, but never trace out the same point. Something like that. So it chaos happens in classical systems in the fine structures of the phase space. Classically, you have infinite precision, right? But like because of Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, you don't have that precision in the expectation values of the observables. So the fine structure of the phase space is washed out. So like these two and a few more reasons, roughly, due to which you cannot use the definition of chaos in classical mechanics to understand chaos in quantum quantum physics. So people have been trying to come up with a definition since like 1980s, but all the definitions that people have come up with so far has some flaw or the other. It does not, like it has not been a universal definition that applies to, like using which you can categorize quantum systems in integrable, non-integrable and chaos. Like, so quantum chaos is still a very interesting open subject for research.
I didn't quite understand the first reason. You assumed that your Hamiltonian is time independent for some reason, and then you canceled the e to the power of minus iht from both Kitts and Bras. But if you have a much more complicated Hamiltonian that is time dependent or doesn't commute with itself at different times,
yeah,
it doesn't cancel out. So I don't think the first reason is that strong.
You don't care about how the revolution is constructed, you just care about the unitary. So when you compare states,
at the end of the day, like the complete unitary for t time will have this UU dagger is equal to identity, right?
Yeah. So probably I didn't understand the definition of psi and psi prime. What were they?
Psi and psi prime are just two different initial wave functions. Like if they are just two quantum states, valid quantum states in the system that you are considering. So it's just the inner product of the initial wave function, and you evolve both of them with the same unitary, with the same Hamiltonian for time t, and then calculate the inner product at a later time. And because of this unitarity condition, basically you will get an equal, like this will, this is going to be equal. So yeah, coming back to classical chaos, so it is a property of nonlinear deterministic dynamical system. So why deterministic here? I mean deterministic in the sense that what are deterministic systems? Any idea?
Non-random, like not stochastic.
Yeah, they are not stochastic. So thing is, if you are given any initial condition and you like give the laws of motion of that, then every initial condition has a fixed final condition. Like after time t, this is what it is going to be. It can't be something else. On the other hand, you can add a random term in the equation of motion, like there are stochastic systems, and that is not deterministic. So whenever we talk about chaos in general, we talk about deterministic dynamical systems.
Do you have any examples of non-deterministic classical systems?
Non-deterministic classical system? Like a stochastic system where like there is noise term. Like if you have any equation of motion where there is a noise term, for example. So that will constitute as a non-deterministic. Because depending on how much is the noise, your evolution will change slightly. and chaotic systems are characterized using quantity which is called Lyapunov exponent. So suppose like you take two different initial conditions, like these are vectors x naught and x naught prime in the two different initial conditions, and these belong to suppose some Rn if you have a n dimensional phase space. So x naught prime is just a slight perturbation of x naught, and upon time evolution this goes to this goes to xt and this goes to xt plus so you using the Euclidean norm you can define the a distance between the two trajectories which will come out to be just the Euclidean norm. So this is a measure of the distance between two trajectories.
Between x0 and x0 prime?
So the x0 and x0 prime are two vectors like in the n dimensional space, and like x0 prime is just slightly away from x0, so very close by initial conditions basically, and you evolve both of them. So x0 evolves to xt and x naught prime evolves to xt plus delta x, and then d is just the Euclidean norm. At any given time you can calculate the distance between xt and x, like the evolved points of x naught and x naught prime. So Lyapunov exponent lambda is given by so this is the definition. So like in general it is dependent on the initial condition and the other initial condition that you consider, like the difference. So the definition is like 1 by t of log of d, the distance at time t divided by the distance at time 0, and this is to be in such that in the limit the initial difference between the initial condition tends to zero, like is infinitesimal, and the time, the evolved time tends to infinity. So or like in chaotic systems, this lambda is greater than zero, strictly positive, not just positive. This, if the Lyapunov exponent, if you can compute this numerically, if you compute it numerically and comes out to be strictly positive, is a chaotic system. It can also be zero or negative, but whenever it is zero or negative, it is not a chaotic system. So here I have like defined them an average lambda in some sense. In general, if you have n dimensional system, you can have n different directions, and the vector can like the distance between the evolving vector can expand in some directions and contract in some directions. So in general, there is something called Lyapunov spectrum. So there are n Lyapunov exponents in the system if your system is n-dimensional. And even if one of them is a strictly positive number, then your system is chaotic.
Sorry, question.
Yeah.
So I feel like for like the double pendulum or something, there's a certain maximum distance that you can have between.
Yeah. So numerical, that's a very good question. So the thing is, as I'll talk about a bit more, your phase space has to be bounded for talking about chaos. So numerically, no matter what distance you take, if you calculate like the difference, it will, if it is chaotic, it will go to some value and then it saturates actually. So numerically it has to saturate because it is a property of bounded system. So you do a linear fit for the time period it doesn't saturate numerically, and the slope is gives the Lyapunov exponent. So I'm plot is time, I guess, and log of this, y-axis is this or this. I'll have to check something, either this or 1/2. I guess just this, yeah, it should be just this. And so the slope will, so this is time, yeah, and the slope will give lambda here. Since this is a log, right? So your trajectories are basically if it diverges exponentially apart, then if you have log of dt by d naught, basically. So in the sense that it is a linear equation, what will be the log of dt by d naught will be some constant times t, right? And if this constant comes out to be positive, that will imply dt is equal to e to the power dt d naught, right? So, and if it is positive, you can see that the dt is the measure of the divergence of the trajectories. So they are exponentially diverging, but they can, yeah.
Oh, sorry.
They can only diverge exponentially apart for finite time because your system is bounded. So after that, that's why you just see this kind of behavior. I've explained, so I had taught a classical and quantum chaos course in March of this year to the previous Sci batch. it was only a one-time course. So I have explained all these things in detail there. So if anyone is interested, you are welcome to go look at the videos. And if you have any questions regarding them, I'll be very happy to answer them in general. So I mean, so here I'm just teaching two lectures, so I'll not have time to go into all the details there as I have discussed there. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to ask about the other cases of lambda because it looks like you're moving on, but maybe you're not. Like the case where lambda, say you have like a couple of lambdas for like maybe it's like a two-dimensional system. Or like freedom. If you have one that's zero and one that's negative.
Yeah.
Does it like kind of... still like, do you still call it kind of like a,
it will not be chaotic, like that system is definitely going to be non-chaotic.
And if they're both, if you have like multiple lambdas and they're all zero, what happens?
That is also not chaotic. Like for example, take a motion on a torus, for example. So if you take a motion on a torus, the trajectories remain, do not diverge apart, and they do not come close to each other also, right? If two torus, if you take like some behavior on a two torus, then if you start with two different initial conditions close y, they neither diverge apart and they neither nor they like come together. So in that case, for example, all the lambdas are going to be zero. That's an example. Yeah,
related to Bache's question, I was taught about like the lambdas in terms of the Floquet multipliers or something like that. But I remember one of them like always has to be zero.
So in Hamiltonian systems, so that is another detail, that there's a difference between Hamiltonian systems and normal dynamical systems. Now Hamiltonian systems, you have Liouville's theorem. So the phase space volume has to be conserved. Your system is conservative in that way. So that's why there are restrictions on lambda, like overall what should be the like product of all the lambdas or sum of all the lambdas there. Since the phase space volume can't shrink or expand. On the other hand, in usual system, for example, the Lorentz model picture that I had showed, it is a dissipative system. So if you compute the divergence of the vector field, for Lorentz, for any dissipative system, and for example, for Lorentz model, like if F is your vector field, then if you compute divergence of the vector field for a dissipative system, it is less than zero. And in that case, there is no condition on multiple lambdas, like they don't have to satisfy a general condition. But on the other hand, for Hamiltonian systems, the divergence of the vector field of the Hamilton's equation of motion has to be zero for Hamiltonian systems. So that implies that there are further implications that in Hamiltonian systems, you cannot have attractors because of that. And on the other hand, for dissipative systems, you can have attractors, because you can start with a big blob of initial conditions in the phase space, and they will evolve towards one. Like I showed the Lorentz model, you saw a strange attractor kind of behavior. You can look it up online. The word strange attractor, and it is just like a 2D. Kind of a butterfly kind of plot. It's a complicated one to make. So it's like, it just any initial condition or any spherical initial condition, it's a 3D system, right? There were three equations of motion for the Lorentz model I had showed. So if you take any sphere of initial conditions, a blob of initial conditions, and you evolve them, when the system is chaotic, like when the for the parameters that Lorentz model is chaotic, this blob, all of them will go to the strange attractor, like on the 2D plane, which doesn't have any volume, right? In a 3D space, a 2D plane doesn't have any volume. So it's a strange attractor and it's a dissipative system, so that is possible. On the other hand, in Hamiltonian systems, it's just not possible. Like a blob of initial condition, the volume will remain as it is, yeah, upon evolution, yeah.
So does that mean something related to Mary said, like the product of all the blobs be zero, something like that?
Yeah, I think it is sum of lambdas. I'll have to cross check, maybe in the tutorial we can talk about it. But I guess overall, I mean the condition, this is the condition, and this implies, I guess, it also depends whether your system is continuous time dynamical system or a discrete system. So for discrete systems, there is another like equation, like constraint between all the lambdas of the system, and for continuous system, it is other one. If I remember correctly, it is sum of lambda should be zero for continuous time like Hamiltonian systems. But yeah, we can double check that. So this is the definition of Lyapunov exponent. So theoretically, this is the definition, but numerically, like when you calculate, you cannot take time t tends to infinity. Like you have to take a finite time and compute it like that. And there are multiple methods how to calculate Lyapunov exponents numerically, and yeah, there are some subtleties there as well, but we are not going into the details of that.
Is there a possibility where the limit as t goes to infinity does not exist? So you don't.
So the thing is, as you take, as far as I have observed numerically, the smaller d value you take, I mean the distance between x naught and x naught prime, basically, that I had given, for a smaller d value, the amount of time for which it will be linear is actually larger. So to me, it looks like if d in this limit d tends to zero, time t tends to can tend to infinity, but for finite d, t shouldn't be infinity. Like, I mean, in the sense that if I take d to be a smaller value, then I'll see something like this, and it will diverge, it will come to a constant quickly. On the other hand, if I take d to be a much smaller value, it will something like that. That's what I have observed numerically. I had done like some numerics for the last course for the Lorentz model, and yeah, we can look, I can show you the numerics like maybe later in the tutorial or after that. So what it comes, but it was something like that probably. So in that case, when d tends to zero, like t can tend to infinity, like this is the standard definition that has been used every year everywhere, but obviously numerically we don't take that limit. Now that you have some flavor of chaos, like from the knowledge that you have, can you, so degree by degrees of freedom, you understand properly what do we mean by degrees of freedom in Hamiltonian systems in general? Like, can you give any the definition, anyone? What is degrees of freedom?
The number of q's.
Yeah, that's right. So I would also say like minimum number of Qs, that minimum number of generalized coordinates, that using which you can like describe the configuration space completely. So that is degrees of freedom. So, and the phase space dimension is twice the number of degrees of freedom. So like some people can confuse these two numbers, but since I'll be using this term a lot, so it's important to keep this in mind that if you have set of PIs and QIs in Hamiltonian systems, the degree of freedom, short DOF, is minimum number of QIs required to completely describe the configuration space. And dimension of the phase space is 2n, 2 times degree of freedom. So from the knowledge and integrability definition, like loosely speaking, is when number of degrees of freedom is equal to number of constants of motion. Also, they are also called fast integrals of motion or conserved quantities. But they are not just any constants of motion. They have to satisfy some criteria. I think David had given the criteria as well. Does any of you remember, like, what were the criteria for, like, in integrable systems? This is what we need. This the number of degrees of freedom is equal to the number of constants of motion. So first of all, how do we characterize constant of motion? Like, mathematically, given any function of PAs and Qs, how will we check that it is a constant of motion? Yeah?
Put some bracket with the Hamiltonian.
Yeah, that's right. So if constants of motion, A is a constant of motion, if the Poisson bracket is 0, that's right. So now, if your system has n degree of freedom, for it to be integrable, we will need n constants of motion. COM is constant of motion and not center of mass. So we should have this. But, and suppose there are some functions fi. Are there any conditions on FIs, like, apart from them satisfying this condition, are there any more conditions? Yeah?
Doesn't like a Poisson bracket of one constant of motion with another give like a third or zero?
Yeah, so in general, if F1 and F2 are constants of motion, their Poisson bracket, if it is F3, F3 can be 0, or it can, if it is not 0, then F3 is also a constant of motion. That's right. So these constants of motion, like in, for a Hamiltonian system to be integrable in the Liouville sense, these constants of motion need to be in involution which implies that pairwise they should commute. That is a requirement for integrability. And the other is that they all should be functionally independent of each other, in the sense that suppose you have a free particle. For example, in this case, I can say that energy is a constant of motion, right? Energy doesn't change for a free particle. And momentum is also constant, like motion, like magnitude of momentum from here. So in that case, like you can say that, okay, we have energy as a constant of motion and momentum as a constant of motion, but they are functionally dependent on each other, right? Enough for the case of free particle. Yeah.
For the, so does the second one and the first one, like, I feel like the first one already kind of implies the second one, or maybe the other way around, like, does it?
Actually, the other one, not. For example, I guess you have studied in the Kepler problem that you have these standard constants of motion for any central force problem. But then in Kepler problem, you have these hidden symmetries, right? Laplace, Runglund's vector, something like that. Yeah. So those are different. Those hidden symmetries are different than the usual symmetries, I guess. So, but all of them can't be in involution because of this another theorem, I guess, David has discussed, that you can have at most, in an n degree of freedom system, you can have at most only n constants of motion that are in involution with each other. But for Kepler problem, we have more number of constants of motion and the system is super integrable. So all of them can't be in involution, right, because of that theorem. So this certainly doesn't imply that, and I guess all those constants of motion in the Kepler problem are independent of each other. But this one implies this or not, like, again, using that, I guess, using Kepler problem, you can see the Kepler problem is a counterexample here, right, I guess. So other thing, like, yeah, I have been also, like, physically trying to think, like, what is the physical intuition or physical picture of Poisson bracket in involution, and the Liouville theorem of integrability, its proof is there in the book by Arnold, V. Arnold, Mathematical Methods of Classical Mechanics. So in 10th chapter, Integrable Systems, the proof is mentioned. So I have been trying to go through the proof to understand that, but I do not have a complete answer to that yet, that what is the physical picture, like what happens when the Poisson bracket of two constants of motion commute with each other, and what happens when they do not commute with each other, like what is the picture in the phase space, because these define basically hypersurfaces, right? So the constants of motion, like precisely speaking, the constants of motion has to satisfy these two conditions for integrability. So now from your knowledge, like, can you give a few examples of integrable systems? I'm sorry? Yeah, free particle, that's right. Yeah.
System where energy is conserved.
Yeah, that's right. So that is a very important point. I mean, that no matter what is the potential, what is the form of the potential, if it's just one-dimensional time-independent potential, your system is integrable. Like, that's a very important point that I was anyway about to make. So thanks for pointing that out. All. 1D time independent potentials. So this is like a class of Hamilton like systems, right? So if whenever you just see that the system is time independent and it is just one dimensional, though, implies that the system is integrable. Any more? Yeah.
Kepler problem.
Yeah. That's right. So Kepler problem, and more generally, like spherically symmetric potentials. So can you name the in a spherically symmetric potential, like the number of degrees of freedom is 3, right? And what are the 3 constants of motion? If anyone remembers, I guess it has been done in the tutorials, right? Yeah.
Hamiltonian and your 2 angular momentum. So like your azimuth one and your theta.
Yeah. Or you can say like the total angular momentum, the energy, and the z component of the angular momentum. So given that you have a simple pendulum, what can you do to a simple pendulum to make it non-integrable? What are the things that you can do to a simple pendulum such that the system becomes non-integrable? Any ideas?
Get another degree of freedom, like the movie you showed to us.
Later. Yeah, so that is, instead of restricting it to a plane, you can let it explore the other, like the other angle as well. Apart from that, any ideas? Yeah.
Noise.
Something along that lines. Add a time dependence. So if you make it a periodically driven simple pendulum, something like give a nudge to the pendulum each time, like each time it comes to a certain position or something like that. So periodically driven simple pendulum is one of the simplest examples of non-integrable and chaotic systems because it is still a 1 degree of freedom system, right? Yeah.
And magnets?
So just magnet won't do.
One.
I mean, magnets to a pendulum in a plane? Oh, I see. You are saying that, okay, yeah. So if it will remove, I mean, I guess if the, yeah, if it is in 1D and the magnetic field is constant, then I think no. But if it is a time dependent magnetic field, so as I was talking about, if you give a time dependence to the simple pendulum, the only constant of motion it has was energy, right? And if you can make it time dependent, then it is no longer like the constant of motion is no longer there. So it becomes a non-integrable system.
Isn't Kepler problem superintegrable?
Sorry?
Isn't the Kepler problem?
Yeah, Kepler problem is superintegrable. You have
so
more constants of motion there.
So if the system is superintegrable,
Yeah, that's right. So we have given, like, yeah, so Kepler problem is integral.
The definition, degrees of freedom should be equal to the number of
constants of motion. Yeah.
What is the constant of motion?
So the constants of motion also have to satisfy, like, these conditions, right? So if you just consider the symmetric, a spherically symmetric potential, the constants of motion there do satisfy these conditions. So that implies any spherically symmetric potential is already an integrable system. So for Kepler problem, the 3 conserved quantities are first the energy, like the Hamiltonian itself. Second is the total angular momentum. And third is the angular momentum in the z direction. The total angular momentum is conserved in the sense that you can think about just the usual Newtonian mechanics terms, that there is, when there is no external force, then there is no torque, right? And that implies that the angular momentum will be conserved. That way you can see that. So we are talking about some. There is another very interesting integrable system, like it is also a spherically symmetric potential, that is Coulomb potential. So hydrogen atom, like you have seen in quantum mechanically, you can integrate it. So classically also you can solve for that potential and it will be integrable. So yeah, that's another interesting integrable system. And one of the very interesting non-integrable and or partially chaotic system, both classically and quantum mechanically, are Rydberg atoms, which are like hydrogen atoms in strong magnetic field. So you can study those, that system, like semi-classically, and you can do these classical analysis, plot Poincaré maps, using which you can visualize chaos as well. So it has been seen that it is chaotic, for example. So a system which can be studied classic, semi-classically and quantum mechanically, so that way it is interesting. You can also explore chaos quantum mechanically using Rydberg atoms that way, and you can study it classically.
Sorry, is that one single Rydberg atom is chaotic? Like more than one interacting?
I think just, yeah, one single atom. Like if you have a hydrogen atom and if you apply a strong magnetic field to it, and in highly excited states, like you have high enough energy, you can study it semi-classically and the Poincaré map is chaotic. There is a 1992 article by Martin Goodsweller in Scientific American. I think the title is just Quantum Chaos. In that, there's a figure of Poincaré map for this Rydberg atom, which very nicely shows the chaotic part and like the regular part of the system. So yeah, I can probably just show it in the tutorial if anyone is interested. What can, any idea what can we do to a Kepler problem to make it non-integrable?
Maybe put it in a super duper weird gravitational field. With that?
Yeah, like since it is spherically symmetric, if you break a spherical symmetry in one way. So like one of the things would be add another body to the problem, right? So instead of two body, make it a three body problem. So like that is. So in general, any n-body problem, in gravitational potential, is non-integrable. And there is a very nice history to the three-body problem around 1900s, I guess 1880s or 90s, that like there was a king who announced a mathematical kind of competition, and in which the question was to, or one of the question probably, the question was to solve the three body problem, because till that time they did not know whether the three body problem can be solved or not, in the sense that there are three gravitational bodies, they are interacting with each other using gravitational force. So can you solve this system or not? So the winning entry was made by Henri Poincaré for that competition. The interesting part is after he submitted his entry, he realized a mistake in his own solution. And since it was a winning entry, like, yeah, he was probably very embarrassed by it. And he took, like, he did the whole calculation again. In that way, he discovered a lot of new interesting things. And there is a lot of history, like the article, the winning entry was supposed to be published and how it he had to get it retracted or something like that. So, like, I mean, think of it that way, that, okay, there is a competition and there's a winning entry, and then later on you found out that there is an error in the winning entry. So whoever were even judging the prizes, like judging the entries was like, so there is a whole history behind the three-body problem. You can see it, like, there is one person, like, I found one thesis written on the three-body problem, actually, in 1990s, I guess. Like, there's so much history to it, what people did. Like, people have been trying to solve it from 1600s. And only very later in, like, 1900s, people understood that it is not solvable. So starting from 1600 till 1950s, there is a very long history to this problem, and it is very interesting. So there was a thesis written on the, and thesis and a book on the, based on the thesis. Any more simple examples anyone can think of for non-integrable systems and want to add to the list?
Weather?
Sorry?
Weather?
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about the weather is, like, Lorentz tried to model it in just a 3D equation, and then there was chaos even just in three-dimensional system. So as I said, like, dynamical systems can have chaos, right? So just there's a theorem that there cannot be any chaos in a 2D plane. Like, that basically covers this case for the case of Hamiltonian systems. So for 1 degree of freedom Hamiltonian systems, time independent, the dynamics happens in 2D plane. The phase space is two-dimensional, right? So because of that, like, and even in general systems, like, if you take any mathematical model which has just two variables, x and y, instead of three, like in Lorentz model, x, y, z, so there cannot be any chaos if your dynamical systems, like, equations of motion are time independent. If your equations of motion are time dependent, that is a different case. So suppose you have a two-dimensional system. So if your equation of motion is time independent, then any initial condition here, the vector field is basically defined, right? And for time independent equations of motion, differential equations, but if your system is time dependent, then the vector field can change with time. So an initial, for a time independent system, an initial condition here, if it comes back to itself, this is the only way it can go to, right? For time independent one. So you cannot have the fine structure in phase space that I was talking about in a 2D plane. On the other hand, if it becomes time independent, then at time t0, if it was here, at time t1, when it comes here, the direction of the vector field may have changed, so it can go in other place. So the trajectories can intersect when the system is time dependent. So you can have chaos in 2D time dependent system, but not in time independent system. And the proof of is it, like the theorem is called Poincaré-Bendixson theorem, which is called no chaos in 2D plane. Like that is like 2D plane, I should add like time independent. But yeah, like that is the crux of that theorem.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
For the examples, so for example, free fields or like a strain on a wave on a strain is integrable, right? Like
wave on a strain.
Or free field in general. It should be. I don't know. I feel like he can solve because you can't express it.
Yeah. Most likely yes, but
so I was just thinking about the degree of freedom and the concept, like, because it seems like you have infinite number of degree of freedom.
Yeah, that is the thing that, so for example, turbulence is another example of chaos, right? But in turbulence, when you talk about fluid, like there are infinite number of particles. So that is a whole different theory than a system with a finite number of particles and hence finite degrees of freedom.
So here we're just all talking about like finite number of.
Yeah, so I only know, I have only studied the finite degree of freedom case, finite number of particles, what happens in fields, or what happens when there are infinite degrees of freedom, for example, like fluids. Turbulence, these cases, you can have chaos, you can have integrable behavior, but I have not gone into the details of that, so I'll have to look into detail to answer your question regarding that. So now, like, if you have an integrable system, you can solve it, right? I mean, ideally you can solve it, you may not always be able to solve it, exactly find an analytical solution, but in principle you can always, there exists a solution, and referring to like David's lecture notes, near equations 2.74, like if I are the conserved quantities, and the solution, I mean, I'm assuming that the system is basically integrable. In that case, if you know the constants of motion, you can solve it like this. And you can also call action angle variable formalism, like so here the important point I want to mention is, like, there is a frequency associated to like the generalized coordinates here, So this, there are, if your system is has n degrees of freedom, and if it is an integrable system, there are n frequencies which are constants, according to which your generalized coordinate evolves in this coordinate system. Like this is actually there in David's notes, so you can just check out the text near equation 2.74. So the thing is, like, you can define, like, understand the behavior of a tori in the phase space based on these frequencies here. So before that, I can say that, like, if you have an integrable system, n degrees of freedom, so 2n-dimensional phase space, and in general, if there is no degeneracy in the stuff, then your motion will happen on an n-dimensional hypersurface in the 2n-dimensional phase space, right? Because there are n constants of motion. Each constant of motion will define a hypersurface. For example, energy. If you have n degree of freedom system, so 2n-dimensional phase space, so energy will, when you fix the energy, you get a 2n-1-dimensional hypersurface. For example, in harmonic oscillator, when you fix the energy, you get a 1-dimensional hypersurface in the 2D plane, right? So likewise, in if you take double pendulum, you have 2 degrees of freedom, so 4-dimensional phase space. What is the dimension of the energy hypersurface?
Can you repeat it again?
So it's okay. So yeah, I'm just saying that the dynamics in the phase space happens on an n-dimensional hypersurface in the 2n-dimensional phase space if the system is integrable. And I'm trying to explain why. So in the sense that if we take the simplest example of harmonic oscillator, so it is a 1 degree of freedom system, right? So 2-dimensional phase space, so that will imply that if I fix the energy, the motion happens only on a 1-dimensional hypersurface in the 2-dimensional phase space. Like this is the phase space, right? So if you fix the energy to be something here, then it will only evolve on this hypersurface. If I fix the energy to be here, it will only evolve to this hypersurface, and it is restricted to a 1-dimensional hypersurface in the 2-dimensional phase space. So now I am saying that if you take a double pendulum, which has 2 degrees of freedom, so what will be the dimension, if I fix the energy of the double pendulum, what will be the dimension of the hypersurface on which it will evolve?
Three,
yeah, that's right. So if overall, if you have n degrees of freedom, that implies 2n-dimensional phase space, and that the dimension of the, if I fix the energy shell is 2n-1-dimensional. Does this statement make sense? So now so we have energy is a constant of motion, and we have more constants of motion, right? Overall, we have n constants of motion in the integrable system. So each constant of motion will define a 2n-1-dimensional hypersurface. If I fix the value of the constant, depending on the initial condition, it will define a 2n-1-dimensional hypersurface. And overall, your the dynamics will happen on, like if I take any initial condition and construct the trajectory out of the Hamilton's equation of motion, the dynamics will happen on the n-dimensional hypersurface in the 2n-dimensional phase space because of these constants of motion. I mean, given that there are no degeneracies and stuff.
So each
yeah.
motion will decrease one from the 2n.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. In general, like going, if you have a 3D space, just generally, when you have a plane, you reduce it to a plane and then reduce it to a line, like giving some. So likewise, each constant of motion will reduce the dimension in which the phase, the dimension of the phase space that the trajectory will explore. So in integrable systems, any trajectory explores only n-dimensional hypersurface in the 2n-dimensional phase space. And there is some isomorphism to n-torus. And that's why you have n frequencies that I was mentioning here. Again, generally, if you have a 2-torus, you have two frequencies, right? One associated with motion here and one associated with motion here. There are two frequencies. So in an n torus, there will be n frequencies depending on the radius, for example, or how it evolves. So in integrable systems, the motion in some like canonical coordinate system, the motion happens on an n-dimensional torus, like you can see that. I guess he has mentioned that in his notes as well. So we'll take it from here. Next lecture, see you all in the tutorial today.
Thank you.